Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Monday, April 4th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. Right now, exclusively live on YouTube, as we told you. So if you forgot and you're sitting there waiting on Facebook or Twitter for the live stream link, hopefully you find this sooner than later. But we are here live on YouTube, trying to drive all our traffic to YouTube. Mainly just because we want to be a one-stop shop there and really trying to grow our YouTube channel. So if you are watching on YouTube or if you are watching after the live stream is over, do me a favor, hit subscribe and click the bell so you never miss a live stream and you always know when we put out a new episode, a new content. There'll be three of them this week. Biggest one that I'm most excited about is breaking down Jim Knowles defense with the film. Kind of analytically and schematically breaking down what Jim Knowles does, because he has some cool shit, man. As you go through and study him, a lot of reactionary stuff where it's not just a perfect picture, like a blitz is drawn up where you run an X blitz and these gaps, you know, they read a lot of their blitzes. A lot of their defense is reactionary, but triggers hard. It's aggressive. It's really, really big time shit. So excited to break that down for you. And then if you could, I got a question for you. Tell me what you think this defense will be ranked at the end of the year in total defense. Top 5, top 10, number 1, top 25. What's a realistic goal for Jim Knowles' defense? Mention in the comments down below what you think a realistic goal for this defense will be. Because I'm curious. I'm curious your thoughts. I have my own opinions, but I will save that for the Jim Knowles' defensive breakdown. But we got some cool shit to talk about. First and foremost, Chris, I want to start with this. Because we live in a double standard world, right? Where, you know, men can say certain things and can't say certain things. Women can say certain things and women can't say, or women can really say whatever they want. But this was in the national championship game. I just want you to listen to these absolute clown shows and what they said.
So simple. It's so simple. Yeah, it's a game of inches at the same time. So those simple things are not always so simple.
It is. It's a game of inches. Ask the Cox.
Ask him.
And they're taking those inches.
Do you take those inches?
Absolutely. When you're on the court.
I mean, like, how can you say that in 2022? I mean, it's a game of inches. Just ask the Cox. And then it's a game of inches. Can you take the inches? Oh, absolutely. I can take the inches. Like, what are we talking about? And never mind the fact Megan Rapinoe can suck a fat cock. I mean, she doesn't. She munches boxes clearly, but she's awful. I can't stand her at all. You talk about a horrible role model, horrible person. I mean, not a horrible person. I guess that's unfair, but just a horrible role model. Just her takes on everything are just absurd. And I don't know the other two women. Don't care to. But honestly, I'm glad I didn't watch this because this basketball game was phenomenal. South Carolina won the national championship. That coach of South Carolina deserves coach of the millennium. I mean, watch out for them to be the Duke of college women's basketball here soon. So shout out to South Carolina. But this double standard, if a man said that, he'd be fired before the end of the broadcast. But this bitch can say it. No problem. No problemo. She can talk about taking inches of cock on live TV.
Zach, if I would have said that and we went to commercial break, we would have came back and there would have been a white man sitting in my seat. They would have fired me before the commercial break ended and they would have had somebody there and ready.
It just, I can't understand it. Like,
and it wasn't even funny.
No, it wasn't funny at all. It's like, it's terrible. It's really, really bad. And it's just the double standard that we live in this world, really. Just awful. So I just wanted to put that up there in case you hadn't seen it because they apparently the girl on the bottom can take some inches. Any of you well-endowed men out there, if you want to slide in her DMs, she's bragging about taking inches. So there you go. Really just wanted to, it was a tip drill for one of our listeners.
Okay. Calm down. anyway, what else you got, Zach?
Well, I don't know. Did you hear about this kid, Nicholas Harbor from Archbishop Carroll in D.C., defensive end? I saw a video of him yesterday. Absolutely absurdity. It reminded me, so Zach Harrison, right? Mm-hmm. Big time defensive end, number one defensive end in the country. Obviously came to Ohio State, was a large defensive end, right? He wore a size 14 shoes, and he also ran track, right? And they didn't make track spikes in his size. I don't know if he was 14. It might have been a size 15. So they didn't make track spikes, so he had to run track in tennis shoes, right? Basketball shoes. And he ran an 11 flat 40 or 11 flat 100 meter dash. And people like lost their mind. I did. I was like, this kid is nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, how does a kid run this fast? Well, this kid in DC, Nicholas Harbor, Archbishop Carroll, private school in DC, plays in the private school league with DeMatha, Good Counsel. Like, DeMatha is where Chase Young went. Great players from Good Counsel is where Stephon Diggs went. I recruited there for, I don't know, 5-6 years. Larry Johnson is a legend in that area. So keep that feather in your cap right there. Larry Johnson is a absolute goat in the DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia. This kid's 6'5", 235, and ran a 10.3200 meter. 10.32, Chris.
Unreal. That is unreal.
I'm trying to think if I ever had a receiver run that fast. This kid is.
I mean, Devin probably ran close to that, and Parrish probably ran close to that, but those are guys that are, you know.
Yeah, in college. Devin was like a 10.7 in high school. He ended up getting down to like 10.4-ish. But you're talking about a high school kid at 6'5", 235, running a 100-meter dash. I'm not shitting you. I'm trying to think. Like, Jameson Williams, nope. He was like a 10.5 kid, which, by the way, is flying. Flying.
Mm-hmm.
Like 10.32 at 6'5", 235. I'm going to go on record and to say there's never been an athlete of this caliber ever.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Calvin Johnson when Calvin Johnson was already in the pros.
And I'm telling you, Calvin Johnson was not a 10.3. 10.3 is world class. Like, if you're running a 10.3 as a junior in high school, you're training for the Olympics because you're going to be a sub-10 by the time you're full grown and like 19, 20 years old. A sub-10. Now, this kid won't because he's going to play football, so he'll be 265, and there's no fucking way he runs sub-10 at 265. If he does, he should just go procreate and be like a Kentucky Derby winner, right? Like, $100,000 and I'll procreate with you.
Like in China when they put the two tallest people together and had Yao Ming as the kid.
Bro, I'm telling you right now, if this kid is 245 and goes around a 10 flat, if I'm him, I'm putting myself out to stud. Like, 100 grand, we can have sex and you can have my child. Like, that just absolutely, we've never seen an athlete like that.
Now, what position do you want him to play?
I don't fucking care. I don't know. Tight end, receiver, D end. Like, I don't know.
All of them?
Unbelievable. Like, I've never even imagined.
It's hard to even fathom. You can't even fathom it, Zach, because that is absurd. World-class speed at that size and that much muscle?
Yeah, it's nuts. So if you haven't yet, just type in his name. It's Nicholas. It's N-Y-C-K-O-L-E-S because you always got to be different. You always got to spell your name different. So
I'm okay with him being different, damn it.
Man, he is different. He's built different, everything about it. So go check him out or just type in 10.3. I promise this, all you have to type in, it'll be the most first viral thing you see. I mean, it looked like a grown-up racing against little kids.
Yeah.
It was nuts. Now, and to be fair, there was a kid that ran 10.33 right next to him, but he was a small skill kid, right?
That whole heat was fast as shit.
Oh my God. Like, the slowest time was at 11.01, I think.
Like, they're fast as fuck. Like, just straight up. So
I don't know if people understand how fast 10.3 is, though. Hear me when I say, I don't think Ohio State's had a receiver since Ted Ginn that has run that fast. 10.3 in high school is absurdly fast.
Yeah, so that's literally faster than Jameson Williams in the same size as Chase Young.
It's absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. You got to go watch the video, so go check it out. Really crazy. Really crazy. But I'm sure everyone saw, but it was student appreciation day on Saturday, the scrimmage. Every spring, Urban started it, and I think it's one of the coolest things that he did. He started, and it's good to see Ryan carry it on, because now it feels like that'll be a tradition 100 years from now that they're still doing. And it's so cool. It's so cool for everyone. The students, the players, the coaches, the recruits. What a huge recruiting weekend. And it just, it was an awesome atmosphere. And it's so cool. And I think the coolest storyline of all was CJ Stroud stayed after practice until every single person who wanted a picture or autograph got one. And I mean, they said he was out there for like two and a half, 3 hours, like something crazy. And it just speaks to his character. Mm-hmm. Kind of similarly, I saw an awesome picture of Justin Fields with some kids and a family that had a great experience with him, which I don't remember the guy's name, but I called him out.
Jersey
Jerkoff, whatever his name is. Of course, he's a Barstool personality. Oh my God. Like Barstool, the more and more you watch them, they're becoming a bunch of fucking like Jersey Shore slick back fucking douchebags. You notice that? Like, I don't want to say I like Dave Portnoy, but I respect Dave Portnoy. I don't think he is that. I think he's smart as shit, first of all. But some of the people that are part of their brand, most of the people are just, you're like, what is this guy? This guy's a cheese dick. Like, he would have got beat up at a college party when I was in college, like complete cheese dick. Now the girls that work for Barstool, sheesh. I mean, you talk about smoke shows and really smart and really, really good on camera and behind a microphone. I mean, I don't know what it is. Whoever's hiring their women is doing a great job because those girls are stars. Whoever's hiring their men are just like, what the fuck are you trying to have a Jersey Shore party and fuck Snooki?
Yeah, and basically the Jersey whatever dude complained and called Justin Fields a scumbag because he didn't want to take a picture with him, and he said he felt like...
Your fat Jersey ass is 40 years old. I don't want to take a picture with you. Why do you want a picture with a kid anyways? That shit is weird, man.
He strikes... It's the same energy as like the baseball games when you see a home run being hit and like a 40 or 50-year-old man going and fucking pushing a kid out of the way to get the home run ball. Like, that's...
Yeah, I'm
like,
sure it was a line of kids that wanted an autograph, and Jersey Jerkoff went in there and pushed his way to the front like, hey, man, could I get a picture? Right. I want to send it to Barstool Big Pussy or whatever his name is.
he just smells like a bitch. I can smell him through the way he was talking, man. I couldn't believe it. He's like, that's what they're there for. They're there for our, you know, for us to take pictures with. It's like, no. He's a quarterback. He's there to play a sport. And yes, he's a celebrity, but he doesn't owe you a damn thing. He doesn't owe you anything.
Like, you know, if you give it to you, good like for that. Him. They have this entitlement issue. Like it's all honestly, it's like slavery. Like, oh no, we own him. He's our quarterback. He has to take a picture with me. He's like, bitch, what? He doesn't have to do anything. He plays a sport and you like watching him. Fuck off. Like, but never mind the fact that Justin Fields is a great kid. I promise he would never be an asshole to someone that wants his autograph or picture ever. Now, if it was that guy, I'd be an asshole. But
yeah, I mean, literally, Buddy was probably shoving kids out of the way, cutting everybody, being loud and disrespectful. And Justin was probably like, yeah, this is not P. And it, dude's whack, dude's corny. But I do want to get back to, he's a Steelers fan too, is what they're saying in the comments. But he's a Steelers fan and was acting like, I'm just saying, like you're not even a fucking Bears fan.
No, he's not a Bears fan, because that other guy, the big pussy, he's a Bears fan.
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, back to Ohio State spring ball. So it's cool for the fans. It was really cool to see like a lot of the students with the like welcome Brandon Ennis, welcome Cordell Tate, really like cool. Cause it was a big recruiting weekend, and a huge team that you're familiar with came up, a little high school 7-on-7 team.
Yeah, South Florida Express, man. You go down to South Florida. Recruiting South Florida is awesome. And there's South Florida Express and Florida Fire. Those are the two juggernauts in 7-on-7. And it's really cool because Brett Getz is a guy that runs South Florida Express. Well, him and a group of people. But the cool thing about it is they're really good dudes. And they're good coaches. And they're, because some places you go with these 7-on-7 teams, the coaches are like AAU coaches. They're absolute shitbags. And sometimes you have to deal with them and you're like, this fucking scumbag. But the guys that run those two organizations are awesome dudes. Like, it's not street agents. It's nothing like ridiculous. It's really the most refreshing thing in the world when you recruit DC, Baltimore, Miami, like Virginia Beach. Like, sometimes you deal with fucking scumbags. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll tell you this quick story. When we were recruiting, we actually got, it was the year Jalen Holmes came out, and Jalen Holmes is the opposite of anybody who would ever be a part of street agents or anything like that.
I love Jalen.
Oh my God. So there's this group in the 757 called the Thoroughbreds, the Breds, right? They call themselves the Breds, the Bread Life. It's a 7-on-7 team. And Jalen Holmes hates the organization more than anything in the world. Did in high school, still does now. Like, we'll talk shit about him to this day, but they had almost every athlete. Jalen was like the one guy, cause he was in at Lake Taylor in Norfolk, and he didn't really fuck with them like that. And his coach wouldn't let him. But anyways, they, they ran the town. And that's why you look at the number one safety in the country, Quinn Blanding, the number one D tackle in the country, Andrew Brown. Like, they all went to Virginia because they had such like shady ass ties with Virginia coaches, that these kids are turning down Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, and going to Virginia. And I mean, they really did. Like, it was a motherfucker to try to get in on a kid in Virginia Beach and get him. And really, Jalen Holmes started it. And Taraja Mitchell was the first big time kid that was in that area that came to us, right? There was a couple, one or two that went to Clemson, and then Taraja came to us. And it also, Virginia had gotten fired, so that alliance kind of went away. But there's this dude named Lele. Everyone called him Lele. And I don't know what this dude's deal was. I don't know what he was, but he pulled the trigger on all these kids. Like, he pulled the strings. And so I'm on the phone with him once a week, just trying to build a relationship, trying to get a connection, right? We go down to Virginia Beach. You know how I talked about before, you try to get in 7 to 10 schools every day. That was like the Kerry Combs way of life. Shit, not me. I went to Virginia Beach. I went to 2 schools, and I went to the barbershop and hung out with Lele for like 2 hours trying to build this relationship. And I know for a fact that's why 2 years later I got to Taraja Mitchell. But you talk about, it's just filth, right? Mm-hmm. Filth. This guy, he wasn't even a barber, Chris. He wasn't even the guy. He wasn't the barber. He was just at the barber shop all the time.
That's like some mobster stuff, OG.
So it was nuts. So me and Mike Vrabel, I mean, I went there a couple times. One time, me and Mike Vrabel sitting in the barber shop, fucking chatting up with Lele. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing right now? Like, I guess back, I had to tell that quick story. Back to the main story here. South Florida Express is the total opposite. Just great dudes run it. Like, you don't ever have to go sit in a barber shop. They're never making back channel deals with like UCF, like none of that. So they all come up and they have, you know, the two big time receivers, Brandon Ennis and Carnell Tate, both on South Florida Express. And they both came up and I watched their film, man. You talk about great players. That Brandon Ennis is the best player in the country this year, in my opinion. Yeah. Receiver. Ain't nobody better than that D-end I watched.
You have Ennis higher than Tate right now?
For sure. Okay. I mean, I get it. He's smaller. He's 6 foot. Carnell Tate, 6'2", 185 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But his explosion's just different. Carnell Tate's a great player. He looks quick twitch. He is explosive. He has ball skills. He's long. Like, don't get me wrong. I think they both are advertised.
Yeah, they're both
freaky. I think they both are as advertised. Both five-star, whatever. I think they both would be huge gets for Ohio State. But Brandon Ennis, man, his explosion and top-end speed is just...
Yeah, and he's from your school.
Oh, American Heritage. That's my spot. Torrence Gibson. Yeah. Torrence, yeah. I mean, the list goes on forever and ever and ever, right? Torrence Gibson, Pat Surtain, Tyson Campbell. You go all the way down. Sony Michelle. I mean, they've had great players. I mean, even way more than I'm even talking about. Tavares McFadden went to Florida State. He was a DB. They had, Brian Burns went to Florida State, DN. I mean, we could go on forever. Them and St. Thomas Aquinas were the two schools where they were just loaded. Yeah. So,
and Ennis is that level of talent. And I know that so I'm expecting Ohio State to land both of them. I know that that Tate is much closer to kind of publicly or whatever with Ohio State. But
I'm going to have to try to get Ennis on the show because the offensive coordinator is one of my really good friends. And shoot, I don't know who the head coach is now because Pat Surtain Sr. left and went to the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'll have to look that up. I'm sure I know him, though.
So, yeah, Ennis strikes me. He's a little bit smoother, I think, than Tate. Tate is real twitchy, but also, you know, 6'2", has the size. I know that those are the top two receivers on Ohio State's board, and they're probably the top two receivers on most big-time schools' boards, obviously. I mean, once you've hit this level at Ohio State, you want the best players at every position in the country is kind of what you're looking to operate.
Just a recruiting win for Brian Hartline to get both those kids up to on campus for the Student Appreciation Day, because those kids, they're going to go all over the country, right? All different spring practices, all different, you know, summer camps, all of that. They're never going to see an atmosphere like that. Like that spring practice, there's, you know, 300, 500 students at practice, and they're looking around like, what the fuck? In their mind, that's how every practice is, right? Like crowds at practice. And just to see that energy and to see that support and just the celebrity. I mean, those kids are, you know, you go on a visit, you're visualizing yourself on the field at that school.
And like, and people cheering for you. Yeah.
And in that atmosphere, you're like, damn, this would be cool as shit. Mm-hmm. Cool as shit. And Elk said it was close to 2,000 students, which is fucking wild. But I believe it. I mean, they probably had to, and to be honest, they probably had to cap it because there's not enough room. right? Because I saw videos and I texted with two people. They're like, man, this shit's nuts. I got to work at 7 a.m. and there's a line at the door already. Like, what the hell? Like, that's how it is in Columbus and Buckeye Nation, specifically on campus. Like, what? We get to go watch the football team practice, set our alarm. You know, we might not go to bed. Just go out all night, stay up, and go watch the practice, and then crash after.
And the students knew who was coming. Like, there was lots of, like, welcome Brandon Ennis signs, lots of, like, welcome Tate signs. Like, they knew who was coming. And the practice itself was really cool. C.J. Stroud looked really good. The defensive line, that group of super sophomores looked unbelievable. One of the things, though, I find is interesting is, at least at this point right now, Fleming is still with the ones. He's still slated to start this year.
We already had this conversation. Now, I'm not saying he's not earning it. I'm not saying he's not going to be the guy, but he's going to be a starter at the end of spring ball. That will only change in training camp, because otherwise he will transfer. He will not be at Ohio State if he's not a starter at the end of spring. So he will 100% be a starter at the end of spring. Yeah. I can guarantee it.
I find it interesting because, like if Emeka is better today, which he had the unbelievable one-handed grab. I'm sure we're going to hop on YouTube and kind of talk about the little observations we were able to pick up from some footage that we got and kind of us, you know, being plugged in. But one of the things I thought was that I think about often is, you know, with those top-end recruits there, I mean, two guys that are two of the, to me at least, the nation's number one and number two receiver, them going and them wanting to play early, as everybody does, is it hard to balance? Fleming looks really good, but Emeka's better, but we have Emeka with the twos right now.
It doesn't matter. I promise you he rolls them too. He's not running with the twos. He's running with the ones and he's rolling receivers. I don't think that matters to recruits anymore, especially when you look at what Ohio State has done and how they've – I'm twofold. I think those kids, when you're that good, you're a five-star, all everything, you don't even think about playing time because you think you are fucking Julio Jones. Like, there doesn't matter who's there. Like, I'm the best player that ever lived type of mentality, which is great to have, but it's also going to be humbling when they come to college. But the only thing that I think does hurt Ohio State, and like I said, I don't think – it will hurt them with those two kids because they are that caliber of player. But when you don't play guys like Brian Hartline didn't play a lot of guys. He played three guys all year last year, every play until it was a blowout. And so it's hard for me as a young kid to be confident that with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Mecca Egbuka, and you know, then you look at the rest of the group, I don't know what they think of them, but it's hard for me to say, all right, well, I'm going to be in the, cause I was told guys, you don't have to be in the top three. You got to be in the top six.
Yep.
If you're one of the six best receivers, you are a starter, like right away. And every kid is like, damn, I'll be top six for sure. Like they don't care. You could have 40 receivers. They're like, I don't care. I'm going to be one of the top six. The top two, but I'm going to be the top six, right? And so that's the only thing in recruiting that I would be using against Ohio State if I was recruiting against them is I would be saying like, yeah, but they only played three guys. Like you're going to have to sit for at least a year. If you come here, you're going to play right away because we roll six. And you're still going to get the touches. You're still going to get the looks. Like, we just play more guys to keep you fresh. And so in the fourth quarter and late in the season, you still are as dynamic as you are right now. You're not tired. Your legs aren't tired. You're not sore. None of that. So that would be my angle if I was recruiting against Ohio State. But at the end of the day, those kids, they're not going to care that much.
Right.
Because they just think they're that good.
I mean, when you're that good, I mean you're that good. So I do think it's interesting. Also, the defensive line looked really, really good. And one of the things that kind of gets swept under the rug last year is the inability to generate sacks, and the defensive line play at times is really, really bad. They look really good. I know it's spring ball, and I know the offensive line is going through a lot of reshuffling and some growing pains, mainly because, you know, for the first time, their offensive line coach is one of the best in the room. And so now you kind of got to start from scratch, get rid of bad habits, and really coach these guys and get them ready. But I was pleasantly surprised to the D-line. One thing that I kept thinking about, kind of watching the spring stuff, is that, like, Craig Young would have been so perfect for Knowles.
Yeah.
Like, and
it's a shame he left, because you talk about that's a kid who was a 10-8 linebacker and just looked outstanding. I mean, you know, as a prospect, needed developed, needed coached. And I think it was just a huge mistake on Ohio State's part to let him walk. I think it was a huge mistake, obviously, you know, on how they developed him. And I think it was a huge mistake on Craig's fault. What do we go, Kansas or something?
Like, yeah, he's at Kansas now. Yeah, like, he's at Kansas.
Especially when you see coming down the tunnel, there's about to be a change, right? Mm-hmm. A change is going to be made. It's like, come on, man. It's like when Ed Warner and Tim Beck got fired. I'm telling those receivers, like Terry McLaurin, Johnny Dixon, Paris, like, listen, I know it's been a struggle for 2 years, but you have to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I told him about Ryan Day, and I knew Kevin Wilson really well. I didn't know about his offensive mind, but I'm trying to tell him, like, look at what Indiana did. Like, Ryan Day is coaching the NFL. He's a quarterback. He's a passing guru. And I'm explaining it to him, like, this is going to be different than the year before when, oh, we promised things are going to change, but the same fucking guys are in the meeting room calling plays and everything. Like, it's just, it didn't make any sense. So I think that's the mistake he made. He didn't see that there was a change coming down the pipe and that Ryan Day is going to go hire a big time coordinator. But it goes back to
a linebacker expert, the way that Ryan Day was a passing game. You know what, though?
It goes back to credibility. Like, everyone's sitting there like, why? I don't know what Ryan said in team meetings after the, you know, 2020 season, but I know it was reaffirming the belief in Kerry Combs and the defensive staff, and then it only came to crumble in 2021. So you lose a little bit of credibility with players. Like, when you come in and say, listen, we're making a change because, you know, we're gonna make sure you have the best of the best. It's like, yeah, but you've been saying that for 2 years and that shit was awful. So I don't know if I trust that, right? But to the point, Craig Young, I think everyone made a mistake there, because I agree. That kid with great coaches and the right scheme, he could have been like Darren Lee. Like, just you talk about crazy explosive. Just I really think he could have been.
Has all the tools you'd want in that linebacker spot. I mean, he has all the tools, I believe, that Chamber has athletically. I did disappointed that he left. Again, another note on the spring ball. Cade Stover's a tight end. That's how it's going to be. He's going to take a majority of those tight end snaps. I love G. Scott. I think G. Scott's going to be a good player at some point. I don't think his role as a tight end is going to be nearly as big as I once thought.
Well, we don't know yet, right? I think he's trained and put on weight. He's injured right now, so you're not really seeing what he's doing. But from the clips that I've seen and from the conversations I've had, it's definitely going to be Cade Stover. And G. Scott is hopefully going to be that movement second tight end, you know, athlete H-back that they can use and not lose any dynamic abilities in the throw game and you know, utilize his skill set, because the rest of the tight ends on their roster are projects and they're just not there. And you saw the one clip on goal line where the two tight ends and Cade Stover comes off and makes a great block on the linebacker. And granted, poor number 84. I don't know.
That's Joe Royer. He's a little more wiry than I thought he was. He didn't gain.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to block Zach Harrison, who's like a 3-year starter, but just gets, I mean, destroyed on a cutoff block all the way down the line. And Zach Harrison makes the tackle on Travion Henderson. And it's just, and that play embodied, like, yep, this is why Cade Stover's at tight end. Like, they don't have that guy right now. They don't have that Jeremy Ruckert, or, you know, we could go Luke all the Farrell. Way back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luke Farrell was a great on the line tight end. So they just don't. Cade Stover's got to be that guy. And I think it'll be good for his future. I think he's an NFL tight end anyways.
Yeah, I like Joe, and I like Joe Royer. I think that he'll get his time at some point, but I think he's a little bit too wiry he just looks wiry and obviously not as strong as Cade Stover type.
You know,
he
needs some time. That position, he's just going to have to develop. He's going to get with Mickey Marotti, put on the weight, get bigger, get stronger, and be able to go block, because that's what they asked the tight end to do at Ohio State. And so if you can't do it, you're not going to play.
Mm-hmm. And I know that G. Scott's going to be a movement guy. And the other part of it is like G. Scott could be the movement guy and they can get some mismatches. But on the flip side, like, our receivers versus anyone feels like a mismatch. JSN was absolutely incredible the entire trip, obviously, and Marvin Harrison, that's a big time catch. I mean, the receiver group is as healthy as ever, and so it kind of puts less of an emphasis on the tight ends to be a threat receiving wise. You get good inline blockers and a play here and there is kind of what the tight end position at Ohio State's become. So
yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. And you know what? I think at some point they're either going to accept the fact that they're going to have average tight ends coming to Ohio State, or they're going to have to start incorporating them in the throw game and getting them touches, because I think Ohio State's a place that you should be able to go get a Brock Bowers like Georgia, right? And if you get a difference maker at tight end, like, do you know how impactful that is? The mismatches you get and the play action stuff you can do, like, and it's a shame, because I think Jeremy Ruckert was that type of player. Maybe not Brock Bowers. That's extreme. I mean, that kid is a fucking freak show, but I think that there's capabilities there, and Ryan's offense is so flexible, and he's so smart schematically that he could literally make this offense a tight end offense if he wanted to.
He did just, for one night. Remember the Clemson game 2020? Yeah, for one couple, night only.
For a couple plays, he did.
For three tutties, a couple plays. It was, he was, yeah, that was the tight end game, and they had like eight catches that game.
Yeah, there's
I think,
no doubt.
Yeah, I think actually it's funny. I think Jeremy Ruckert had more catches and yards than Garrett Wilson that game.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what it was. It was the capabilities there. Mm-hmm. The capabilities there, and so I think, you know, maybe Cade Stover's guy. Maybe it's G. Scott. G. Scott is the player that is dynamic enough to be warranted to utilize in the throw game.
I love G. Scott, so I really hope so. You have a clip you wanted to play, Zach?
Yeah, so I want to play this because, like I mentioned, South Carolina, UConn in the national championship. South Carolina won the national championship, and Gino Auriemma, the head coach of UConn women's basketball, in a press conference, just kind of went off about the transfer portal, and I just think it's important for any. For anyone out there watching that is a high school athlete, college athlete, I just think it's an important message that I wanted to share. So let's listen to old Gino talk about kind of after the game, you know, transfer possibilities.
When you could coach kids. And half the team loved it. The other half were a little bit shocked. Like
practice.
But half the team loved it. I think they understood. We don't practice like that anymore. Not like we did 15 years ago. Our practice is not like that. But there's still only one way to win a championship. And you have to be disciplined and you have to play hard and you have to aspire to be great.
Mm-hmm. Preach.
I've never had a really good player leave my program in 37 years that left and made a big at a top 10 or top 20 school. That's just not going to happen. Because if you can't play for me, if you can't play for us at UConn, you can't play anywhere at this level. I let these guys be who they are. I just have certain demands on the court and they have to meet them or they don't play. They know. I'm fair. If nothing, I'm fair. And I asked Kristen one time. Kristen, is it hard to play here? She said, damn right. I said, why? She goes, because you're demanding. I said, do you want me to change? She said, no. You don't come here 14 years in a row because you go, all right, sweetheart, how do you want to do this this year?
All right, sweetheart, how do you want to do this year? So I just thought, I didn't think that's what I heard it. And I was like, yes, preach, because it's so true. So basketball is different than football, obviously. So I equate basketball to every position in football except quarterback, everyone, and maybe kicker and punter, right? Because there's only one, and if you're not the one, you probably need to transfer, right? Simple as that. And I still can make an argument against that, Mac Jones being the greatest example of that. But at the end of the day, if you can't play receiver at Ohio State, you can't play anywhere at a high level, right?
That's it.
And I mean, we can talk about Jameson Williams all day long.
He can play. I think
that was a smart, that was a smart decision. And I still believe that had he just stayed at Ohio State, whatever opinions people had, he would have changed them, right? If Brian Hartline thought he was just a role player, he could have changed his opinion. Mm-hmm. I do believe that. It obviously did work out for him. But I think it's an important message that just, if you're going to transfer, make sure it's absolutely necessary and the best thing for you. Mm-hmm. Because right now what you see in the transfer portal, there's fucking 800 people in the transfer portal. 300 of them aren't going to have anywhere to go. They're going to be stuck in the portal. And I just wanted to kind of, I thought his message was on point and really, really well spoken, because he's right. You can't coach kids the same way as you could 5 years ago. He said 5 years ago, you can't coach them like that anymore. And it's a shame because that's how you develop. That's how you win championships. That's how you're a great team. And so at some point you need to get the buy-in where you can coach really hard and kids aren't going to jump in a fucking portal, because that's how kids get maximized and that's how you win championships.
Straight up. Super important message. Thank you, Zach. I mean, I agree. Same deal.
Well, it's I don't know. Crazy time in college sports. But that's all I got, Chris. Appreciate everybody for tuning in on YouTube. If you missed it, we're going only exclusively on YouTube every morning, 9 a.m. We'll put the link on Twitter. We'll put the link on Facebook. Click that link and come hang out with us live. Interact in the chat. Like I mentioned, If you're watching after the fact, drop in the comments. Where is Ohio State's defense going to rank? Top 3, top 5, top 10, top 25, top 50? Whatever you think it is, drop it in the comments. We appreciate everybody. Menace out.